taken under advisement. Our final case of the morning is United States against Godosky.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court.
We will wait for a second until we manage to complete this. Mr. Moran.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, I reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Core issue in this case is what means, if any, were available by which to vest the district court with jurisdiction in order to act on the claims made by Mrs. Godosky. In this particular matter, Mrs. Godosky filed a pro se motion for commutation of sentence. Thereafter, the district court appointed myself to try and answer some of the questions that the district court had. And that was the specific question that she asked. In response thereto, I filed a motion for quorum nobis. And the issue then becomes before this court whether or not quorum nobis was in fact available to Mrs. Godosky. This is an unusual fact pattern in that Mrs. Godosky and her husband jointly pled guilty, were represented by the same attorney, and Mr. Godosky began his prison sentence a year and a half or so before Mrs. Godosky began hers. They had staggered prison terms as part of the plea agreement that they had entered into
to take care of their 13-year-old son.
Among other things, that's correct, Judge. The situation here is that the district court found that quorum nobis was not available. And the basis for that finding was really that there was no civil or legal disability pursuant to the case law, including the United States versus Bush, which is an opinion by Judge Easterbrook, and that this family matter didn't rise to that kind of a problem. The standard of review in quorum nobis, we submit, because it's a hybrid action, should be the same as that as applied to a 2255 petition. So factual findings by the district court are subject to a abuse of discretion standard of review, and the legal findings are subject to de novo review. We believe that the unique factors in this case did, in fact, establish civil disability within the framework of the Bush decision. As the court is well aware, the civil disability rule in this circuit is in conflict with that in several other circuits.
I don't understand how any of this can be relevant, given that your client is still in custody.
Well, Judge, there...
Quorum nobis is a post-custody common law writ. It's not a substitute for 2255 during the period of custody. And we held that in a case called Owens against Boyd. The United States relies on Owens against Boyd, and I noticed that neither your brief nor your reply brief deigned to discuss the case.
Well, I didn't discuss Owens versus Boyd at the time because I felt that it was distinguishable.
The fact that a case is distinguishable is something that you might want to show in your briefs. It's not a reason to ignore it. I don't see how it's distinguishable. Maybe this would be a good time for you to explain why you think it's distinguishable.
Well, Judge, I think that generally the case law is, apart from Owens versus Boyd, that quorum nobis is available where there's nothing else left to do. In this particular case, the government took the position
which
that...
Which case would you principally rely on for the proposition that quorum nobis is available to a defendant who is still in custody?
Well, in this particular case, the question was whether she was in custody at the time that she filed it because of the...
Which she plainly was. Now, which case would you principally rely on for the proposition that quorum nobis is available to a defendant who is still in custody?
Well, obviously, I would not rely on the Boyd case. The fact of the matter is...
Well, your suggestion was that Owens was somehow at odds with other cases that have allowed quorum nobis to be sought by somebody who's in custody.
Well,
the client was in custody when she filed under the terms of Hensley and Mayling against Cook. So that leads to my question, with what is Owens at odds?
Well, unlike the Owens case, what we have here in terms of the core issue of jurisdiction is the question of right to counsel. And in this particular case, and I noted that
the Sixth Amendment is the theory of relief. It does not create a right to collateral attack.
Well, Judge, I think that...
Is there any case that you are aware of saying coram nobis can be used by somebody who is still in custody? Any case in the federal system?
Not as I stand here right now, Judge. I can't think of a case in this jurisdiction. As Your Honor indicated, it's usually...
I don't know of any case in any of the 13 federal circuit courts and 94 district courts. Now, maybe there is some. But
well, I think that it starts out, if, as you wrote in the Bush case, Your Honor, that the individual right to the writ arose when someone was languishing in incarceration. And therefore, this was a mode of achieving some kind of relief. Thereafter, with the advent of the statutory writs 2255 and 2254, the matter changed. That was in the Bush case. That was around, I think, 1146. You wrote that, page 1146 of that opinion. What we have here, though, with the right to counsel issue and the abandonment here, our position is simply this, that this attorney abandoned Mrs. Godowsky when he informed her that there was nothing that she could do. So therefore, to get jurisdiction in the trial court, whether we call it a coram nobis petition or whether the government is correct and it was a mislabeled 2255 petition, the government, having already taken a position...
If it's a mislabeled 2255 petition, it's out of time. We all agree on that.
Well, I don't think it is out of time, Judge, necessarily, because of the United States Supreme Court decision in Custis versus United States in Lackawanna County. Those two cases say that the right to counsel is a unique circumstance. And when you wrote in the Castellanos case that abandonment counsel at all.
It really doesn't matter who is the author of opinions in this court. We all speak for the institution.
I understand. But if, in fact, counsel abandoned Mrs. Godowsky and her rights.
That's a substantive theory of relief. It's not a response to an untimeliness problem.
Well, the United States
claim could have been raised within the statutory year. The whole premise of statutes of limitations is that they prevent the pursuit of what would otherwise be justified claims.
Well, we argued twofold. One is that equitable tolling was applicable given the unique circumstances of this case. But the other part of that argument is that if, in fact, this is a chronic issue or an Evitz versus Lucy issue, in fact, she had no counsel for appeal at all, and therefore she was denied her right to counsel completely. So,
the way this whole thing went down, there wasn't anybody that was going to appeal. She was content to get a sentence that was going to commence after her husband had served his sentence, right?
No, Judge, that really wasn't the point.
She wanted a delay. She didn't want both of them to go together.
That was a suggestion made by the government in response to her attorney's original request that that she received some sort of a both of them were seeking a downward departure. The government's response was the child situation is a special circumstance. We concede that, but we are not going to give you downward departures. We're going to work around it. We'll give you staggered sentences, and that's what happened. So, no, I don't think that she acquiesced and laid in the weeds to raise these issues for a period of time. The record shows that with...
It looked to me like she didn't even have an idea about appealing or doing anything here.
This didn't happen until
2 years later when the time came when she had to go to prison.
Well, it was actually over a year earlier she had written to Judge Maravich, and I think there's a copy of that in the record, asking him about her rights. And so, no, it wasn't...
Well, he asked her to change his mind or something like that. That's certainly not unusual. When the day comes to report, you start to think, maybe I didn't make such a good deal.
Well, no, I don't think the record bears that out, because Mrs. Gadowski, if you recall, offered to serve her husband's time at the time of the original sentencing because of his illness. And I think that one of the driving factors is that because of his illness, which are chronic conditions, she continues to be concerned about Mr. Gadowski and his ability to take care of Andrew, their 14-year-old son. So that's the driving motivation. I don't think there's anything secret about that. But I think that she did make it clear, as well as she could. She had no experience in the law. She was a 40-plus-year-old woman who had never been involved in any matters whatsoever. Asked the attorney that they had, what do we do? And he said, there's nothing you can do. At that point, I think that he abandoned his obligations as an officer of the court under the rules of this circuit, under the plan. And I believe that there should be a means available to her to seek some kind of remedy. Mm-hmm. Seeing that time is up.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Moran. Mr. Kupiatowski.
May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Steve Kupiatowski, representing the United States. Mr. Moran essentially conceded that in this circuit, there is no authority for coram nobis relief if the defendant, the petitioner, is in custody.
Is there any authority in any other circuit?
I believe the petitioner cited a couple of district court cases in his opening brief that suggested that perhaps coram nobis may be available. But as the United States pointed out in its brief, those all predate Carlisle. They all predate the Seventh Circuit cases, Bush, Howard, Owens versus Du Bois.
And is any of them a holding?
I'd have to look at them again, Your Honor. I'm not sure if they are dicta or holding, but in any event, they're not binding on this court, and certainly they predate Carlisle, which certainly establishes that 1651 is a residual source of authority. Coram nobis cannot be issued if another remedy, a statutory remedy, applies. And in this instance, 2255 would have been the remedy. And again, the conviction here was final on January 3rd, 2000. She had a year from that date to file a 2255 should she chose to do so. She did not, and as a result, there is no basis to address her claim regarding the Sixth Amendment. For those reasons, I would respectfully request that the court affirm the district court's opinion, denying the amended petition for coram nobis.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's no further questions, I yield the remainder of my time to the court.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, counsel. And thank you, Mr. Moran, for accepting the appointment in this case. The case is taken under advisement. The court will be in recess until tomorrow.